Are you an insider? Subscribe to FC Insiders today to receive full unedited interviews, news, rumors, exclusive content, and more. Join FC Insiders at futurecommerce.fm. Future Commerce is brought to you by DotMailer. DotMailer is faster, smarter, and better email marketing automation. DotMailer is trusted by thousands of leading brands around the world. You can start your free trial today at dotmailer.com/futurecommerce and be sure to use the offer code FUTURECOMMERCE for 20% off applicable DotMailer packages. Welcome to Future Commerce, the podcast about cutting edge and next generation commerce, rated one of Forbes' top six podcasts worth your time. I'm Philip.
And I'm Brian.
And we need your feedback about today's show, so make sure you do that at futurecommerce.fm and hit up that discuss comment box on the site. Also, while you're there, make sure to drop us a 5-star on Apple Podcasts or Google Play, and you can listen at any time on your Amazon Echo devices, of which there are about 300 different ones now. On TuneIn Radio with the phrase Alexa Play Future Commerce Podcast.
Sweet. And also, don't forget to sign up for our FC Insiders, our weekly newsletter about what's new and what's next in retail. And honestly, you really can't miss this because we are about to release some sick content.
Sick.
Like, it is amazing. And it will only be available to you through FC Insiders for a limited time. And then we'll release it to the general public. But if you want early access to this unbelievable content, and let me tease it a little bit.
Tease it. Tease me, Brian.
Yes. Philip has written in an article, which also he has basically done sort of a mini podcast with. And we're gonna be alternating on these new blog posts / one-off sort of 7-minute or so, 3 to 7 minute in length podcasts. And they're going to be in-depth looks at different things in the industry. So really, you do not want to miss this.
Don't miss it.
I've already listened to it. It's great.
We can't possibly overhype it because it's that good. So go right now, futurecommerce.fm. And there's going to be a little wiggly box at the top that says subscribe now. Make sure you do that. Get on the FC Insiders list. And this one is can't miss, but they're all going to be can't miss. So, okay. So that's it. Self-promo over. We're super into it. holy cow, there's so much news. I know we keep doing these news shows, but they're great vehicles for talking about a lot of really, really interesting stuff going on right now.
There's a ton going on right now.
Can we kick off the show with my jean jacket story?
Yes. Oh, let's do that. Okay, tell it.
Is that a thing we could do?
Yeah, let's sort of like frame this up. So, Philip, I saw your jean jacket. It was pretty cool. What happened? How did you come about owning such a cool jean jacket?
First of all, the fact that I'm saying jean jacket in 2017 is just blowing my mind. Okay. This is the power and like sort of testament of how all of our retail and digital marketing strategies work even when you know what's happening to you. Even when you know you're being manipulated, they can still work. So the long and short story altogether is the other day I was on Facebook and I ironically posted on Facebook, LOL, jean jackets are still a thing, right? So I posted that on Facebook. And it was not even before the end of the day that all of a sudden Facebook is marketing denim jackets to me, right? And it is fall and maybe it's coincidental.
No,
probably
it's not.
It's not.
No,
it's
we
not.
Know too much. We yeah, know
we knows,
too much.
It's, we know it's, better. We know better, you know? And so I'm getting all these, Facebook ads for a bunch of brands I'd never heard of before.
Hold on. Wait, what if it actually goes back a step further? And like the reason you were even thinking about jean jackets is because that was incepted to you.
Oh my gosh. You know what?
It probably is true.
It probably is true. You've actually now blown my mind in reverse. Okay. Oh my gosh. Okay. So maybe it isn't even when you know it's happening to you. Okay. Anyway. So I'm now thinking about denim jackets, and it was about 2 days of that sort of, back and forth and seeing brand after brand after brand. And and seeing all these different denim jackets when all of a sudden, you know, so I saw this denim jacket. There was a company called Life After Denim, which I had seen on Facebook before, but it came up a couple times, and another one called Grayers, which I'd seen before. And then another one, Todd Snyder. So Todd Snyder, this, this denim jacket comes up, and I was like, you know what? Like if I had to own a jean jacket, it would be that one. It actually was a really nice looking denim jacket. It didn't look dumpy. It looked kind of like what you would expect. Like what, I don't know. It was a totally different
you
type of
denim
jacket.
You still have to have good products. This is, yes. That's the lesson there.
That like. Really, I think that's really what it is. It's that. And plus, you know, I think what happened too is I was seeing a variety of styles and maybe making up my mind too. Like I was incepting myself into buying a jean jacket, even though I thought fundamentally that they were, you know, frumpy and old and sort of a bad, you know, bad throwback. Mostly because they were like the acid stonewash, you know, variety. But this was actually a nice looking one. Anyway, okay. So the Todd Snyder ad comes up. I saw it and I was like, if I had to buy a denim jacket, this is the one I would buy. I said that to myself out loud. I clicked on it. I went through. I saw it was like, it's like $140 or something. I'm like, I am not going to buy a $140 denim jacket. And I exited, right? So there's my exit intent. And 24 hours later, I kid you not, I'm back on Facebook, 40% off ad today only for that bloody jacket. I click through and right on the product detail page, there's an Amazon pay button. And bang. I click, before I even knew what I was doing, I clicked the Amazon pay button, bang, it was all done. And that
one
is,
click, one click.
Yeah, I was already opted into the one click, baby. I did have to confirm the one click. Like, are you sure this is what you want to do? And
well,
this
yeah,
is your address you're going to ship
I would
it to.
Hope
you know,
you had to confirm that. You but, know,
but I think what's insane is that we are at a point now. I lived the entire life cycle of customer acquisition. I knew what was happening to me, and
it
still
didn't
worked.
Matter because you know worked. What. You know why? Because it was a quality product.
Yep.
That was attractive.
Yep.
And then they marked it way up.
Pricing
and then
psychology.
Offered it to you at a price that you thought was reasonable.
Yeah. Actually, you know what? I'm really interested to know, and maybe some of our listeners are doing this sort of thing. There has to be a strategy for customer acquisition that relies not on blanket inflated costs, but maybe sort of more targeted audience-based pricing psychology, price elasticity testing. I really feel like that is an untapped area of potential, especially in you know in all the personalization that we see from time to time. You know, Amazon does this a lot. That's why there's so many there's so many third-party tools out there to track the prices of Amazon publicly over time. Anyway, I just find it fascinating that. Even every step of the way, even though I knew what was happening to me, and maybe even subconsciously, I was incepted in the first place and wanting a denim jacket. It just blows my mind.
Yeah, but you just brought up another idea that I might already be a thing, but hasn't really hit me yet. dude, do you think maybe the future of advertising in this context, the stronger our online identity gets and like the more specific it becomes and the more personal it becomes, like, personal offers from companies yeah. could become a big thing. Like I know this worked for you. It was a broad, sort of a broad, offering, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Maybe not. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe this was a personal offering, but like how crazy would that be if sales weren't blanketed anymore? And,
right.
And all of a sudden you wanted to go like, you know what everyone's, you know, target spend is. And, Yeah,
that's, I do see this happen, especially one. Like, you know, I'm sort of into this the apparel brand sort of thing. So there's actually this there's a company that offers something called a sock drawer makeover. What is the name of this company? Nice Laundry. So they have these collections of socks. And you can buy like a whole what they call the sock drawer makeovers. And we're giving a bunch of free advertising away today for whatever reason, but you can build boxes and it's like 59 to 109, but you get like, you know, 6 to 18 pairs of socks and 18 pairs of socks that you kind of like build your own box of socks, which is cool. A box of socks. So I really like most of their designs. what is really interesting is they run the, you know, they run this business on two main things. One is sort of the, yeah, the box, but they also do a free, or they also do a targeted offer. So they do the bounce exchange, like, you know, exit intent thing, but they also allow, like, they generate a coupon code for you that is yours to use for the first time that you shop. And it's not just on email. They offer it to pretty much everybody, if I remember correctly, which is really unique. It's like, you know, and it's some, you know, crazy code that you have to paste into the checkout. But I just find it interesting, like, how many brands are using that sort of pricing psychology. To be honest with you, I don't know that $59 for six pairs of socks is a bad price point. And then they, you know, I get, they have subscription socks. I don't know. Maybe it's just a way to intro you into the brand. It's likely more what it is, but, I kind of just love the site. It's beautiful. Anyway. Good product at the end of the day. I did get the jacket. It looks, objectively, Brian, do you think it looks good on me?
It's pretty sharp.
Jacket, right?
Okay. It was a good pick. And again, I think this comes like, it's just a good story. This is a good story because
it's a good story.
It shows the life cycle, but also I think it just really shows like, get the right products in front of people and, you know, do, you know, make products that actually sell. And if you couple that with you know, good online marketing practices, you will sell products.
Yeah.
And so
I think somebody has to be interested in that in our audience somewhere. I hope that was for you. Not every story has to be about, you know, virtual aquariums in Dubai airports where fish are spying on you and scanning your face to add to a face recognition database. But that just happens to be our next story.
Yeah, that does happen to be our next story. I mean, this is very much in line with what Blipar was doing with Wikipedia,
yeah.
Where like,
yeah,
they could recognize any face that was on Wikipedia. You take a picture of someone and they're in Wikipedia and they would bring up a whole bunch of information about them, not just their Wikipedia page. But yeah, now it's like anytime you go through this... face scanning virtual aquarium as a security checkpoint.
Which is like a string like of a words tunnel. You never thought that you would ever utter.
That you walk through.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool. You should have a look for it. Look at it. We'll post that in the show notes. Pretty
gosh.
Crazy stuff. We're definitely in the future. This is starting to feel a little minority report to me.
Yeah. So, and they're adding the actual, so you walk through this virtual aquarium, which is really just a vehicle to, you know, require you to have submit to some facial scanning there. This is not low key. Like it is pretty overt what it is they're doing. They just make it a nice experience by making it feel like you're walking through an aquarium. But they are legitimately just there to track your face and to scan you and to make sure that you're not a terrorist of some kind. It's interesting. It's, yeah, very Minority Report-esque. At some point, they're going to drive advertising to you. Have I told you my theory about advertising in airports?
No, tell me.
I feel like if you were to put a bunch of enterprise software ads in any one concentrated location, an airport would spontaneously appear.
Actually, like, no joke, man. That's like AWS,
yeah.
Braintree,
yep.
Everything.
Yeah. Rackspace.
Rackspace. Yeah.
Yeah. Very, very, very interesting stuff. And you know, what's funny is you mentioned AWS there. One that doesn't come up a lot, but we're going to probably start seeing more and more of is I'm sort of hearing some chatter about Microsoft partners getting massive lifts in Azure deployments ever since the Whole Foods acquisition from Amazon. It seems that like retail's really shaken up about Amazon kind of owning the world. And so that's a thing to sort of keep an eye on is that maybe the contraction in this space is going to have a negative, you know, the M&A activity may have some sort of a a negative effect overall on Amazon's business, because Amazon needs the large enterprise partners and especially the large brands to continue to use AWS. They can't all jump ship for Azure, which is incredible.
Yeah. And I think they should definitely have, like, they have reason to be concerned, because Amazon is kind of taking over the world. Now Amazon is launching a sportswear brand that's right. going to compete with Nike and others. And this is just on the heels of Nike finally agreeing to sell on Amazon, which just happened a couple months ago. So I mean, if I was a retailer, and a larger retailer, I should say, not a smaller or mid-sized retailer. If I was a larger retailer, I would be nervous.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a, well, it is something to be concerned about if you're a retailer, but I think it's one thing. It's like, I don't want to give business to the people that I'm competing with. Mm-hmm. I get that notion. What I don't like is the subtext that somehow Amazon is able to see your data, because that fundamentally to me feels icky. It feels contrary to what the whole point of having secure web hosts are supposed to be. And maybe you don't trust Amazon with that, but wouldn't Amazon's entire business model be shot if we couldn't trust them with looking at the data that they're securely storing for us? Isn't that the whole point? Like GovCloud, right? Like, and HIPAA Cloud, like they have specific entire networks specifically just to address the security concerns around people being able to look at their data. I don't know.
Yeah, I think this is why people are a little nervous.
I don't buy it. I think it's a bunch of FUD.
Do you think that they don't have any reason to be nervous?
I think if you don't want to give money to your competitor in one area of their business while you're competing in another, that makes a lot of sense to me.
Yeah, but I don't think that's the new world. Like the new world, I think, unfortunately, or maybe fortunately, competitive brands are giving money to each other all the time. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's just the new tangled web of business that we live in. Like too many conglomerates and too many like overlapping services and too many things where companies rely upon each other. And there's benefit to that, I think, in that, you know, there's checks and balances. But also some danger too. So
This actually kind of plays into this Amazon athleisure story anyway, because according to BusinessInsider.com, which is where we got the story, there are two companies that Amazon is in close talks with. Both are Taiwanese sportswear manufacturers, Makelot Industrial and Eklat Textile. The both of them already make clothes for Gap, Uniqlo, Kohl's, and Eklat, I guess, makes apparel for Lululemon, Nike, Under Armour.
So it's all the same stuff.
It's all the same stuff with a different label.
What stuff looks better? What stuff is a better price? Just get that.
It doesn't matter. You know, it doesn't matter at this point. It's all the same. It's just the same thing.
Yeah, this actually gets back to something I think we talked about on episode 8, which is clothing, like an apparel in the not too distant future, make is going to become more important than brand almost. Like the quality of the materials and the quality of the manufacturing. I think we're going to have more transparency to that level. And so brands will be more about design, but the make will be really, like, I think there's going to be a little bit more attribution.
Actually reminds me, we met somebody this week who was just, I guess a fairly well-known company. I had never heard of them. They're called Best Made. And so shout out to Michael at Best Made because we had a really good time meeting you last week. But so the Best Made company started, you know, making hard goods like axes and knives and things like that. And now we're in soft goods with, you know, leather goods and basically anything that has a stitch, clothing. You know, they are a lifestyle brand in that sort of outdoor space and in the upscale, outdoor space. What I find really interesting is that a textile startup from Silicon Valley acquired them company called Bolt Threads because they saw them as a great vehicle to pilot a new type of spider silk or genetically copied synthetic version of a spider silk or organic synthetic of a spider silk. I'm not really quite sure. We should just have them tell the story on the show.
We really should.
But I find this really interesting in that the application of text to fashion is no longer the, we need a consumer marketing campaign for people to accept nylon or a consumer marketing campaign for people to buy more cotton, right? Because when I was growing up, we had cotton, we had literal cotton commercials on television funded by the US government so that you bought more cotton products. And that I think, you know, is giving way to companies that, you know, are disrupting the space with new textiles. Like, you know, we've mentioned them in the past, like Knitterate and which is like a manufacturing process, or the, you know, 3D printing of textiles. That's the manufacturing disruption. Mm-hmm. And now Bolt Threads, the actual, you know, material itself. It's interesting. I find it very interesting.
I think you bring up a good point, you lead to a broader point, which is, I think, you know, if you're nervous about how much upheaval we've seen in specifically the fashion part of retail, get ready, because I think there's going to be a lot more.
I think you're a little too, what's the word? I don't know. You have a really positive outlook in this idea of brands being only sort of associated toward fit and look and overall style, and not about the materials. I feel like most all of this stuff, some people probably have a sense, especially if you're into fitness and fashion fitness, then you're probably used to the same tech shirts, the same running tech shirts. Every single running tech shirt that you get is the same fabric, like fundamentally. There's very few types of different fabrics. I think you're sort of already, we're kind of used to that, but I don't know if we define it specifically that way. I don't know. I don't know what I'm trying to say.
Dude, I don't know. I think there's a lot more, like, I think there's a little bit more to it than that, but I do see what you're saying. I think, you know, I'm not just talking about that point when I say that if, you know, the apparel world is up in for a little bit more of a shakeup. I think, you know, there are new fabrics coming out, as you just mentioned. So like, yeah, maybe there are a few right now, but there's more coming, one. And two, I think the manufacturing process is changing. And so,
That's for sure. Actually, we've brought him up before, but a shout out to Jesse Lazarus, listens to our show.
I don't think we've brought him up by name yet,
but he seems to be okay with it, I think. So he actually was telling us about, sort of the woven on demand textiles, that can do, sort of really complicated weaves now, like, a jacquard, I think, knit. Yes. And that's apparently a breakthrough for durable fabrics that you would need for furniture manufacturing and things like that. So there are massive leaps forward happening right now in the on-demand space. And I think that will power bespoke brands.
Yes.
And not the Nike will find a way to make it, to build it into their product for sure.
Yeah, but, definitely. No, they already are. They already are. With shoes, they started with shoes and they're doing a great job. Like Nike, I think, Under Armour for sure, and I think Adidas as well, are all doing some really cool. In fact, yeah, we talked to Nick Vu a little bit about that, but some really cool. I mean, I wouldn't call it like, you know, 3D printed shoes, but it is kind of on demand shoe printing or shoemaking. And so, yeah, like, Under Armour has a brand line called, I think it's called Icon or something like that. I should probably look it up. That they have the shoe line that's like insanely customizable. And you know, the way they've been able to do that is through improvements in their manufacturing process. So, I think it's a lot ahead here.
That was a fun little bunny trail that we weren't planning on taking.
That was a fun bunny trail. I love talking about that.
You know what is completely counter to the narrative that there's a ton of innovation in a space that's actually not being innovated at all? Is Apple's new retail stores. The Town Square. Town Square just opened. This is in Chicago, I think. And it is. Everyone's talking about how beautiful it is, but it was supposed to be a brand new take at how retail happens. Instead, it looks more like it's still an Apple store. Shocker. Yeah. It's still an Apple store. It's just a bigger, more sort of open space with a bunch of like places for people to sit around and listen to other people talk. So,
yeah, I actually, here's what I think that's kind of interesting about this. I do think that Apple, while this is just a bigger retail space, Apple's hinting at something about retail that's coming.
Yeah.
Which is that retail spaces are definitely more than just about purchasing at this point, or they're going to be. Like, they're going to be used for other things, places to talk about things and to engage in activities. And, you know, there'll be, you know, an entertainment component. There'll be a social component. It's going to be, you know, Starbucks 2.0. Like, I don't know if you remember, like when Starbucks first came out, it was like the first like worldwide, or let's say nationwide even to begin with, brand where people actually used it to go and engage, like engage with each other and sit down and talk.
Yeah.
And I think that that model is going to be applied in a totally like,
it's already that way though.
Yeah. It's already that way.
Apple need to reinvent the name of the same store that they already have? I mean, maybe they do for their shareholders, but does the world need it? What I see is I went to the mall twice this weekend. God help me. And
that's a lot. I haven't been to the mall in a long time.
I always have interesting experiences when I go to the mall. So I went to the mall because I had to go to the running store and I wanted to get some shoes and stuff, whatever. And when I was there, the only store in the mall that I passed that had people in it was the Apple store. And there weren't just two people in there. There were like 100 people in there. There was a huge crowd of people all around the iPhone 8. They were all on devices. They were all kind of playing with the stuff in the store, but they were very much like it was a happening place. The only other thing that had that much, you know, activity in the mall was the play area with a bunch of 3-year-olds. So, I, you know,
same thing, like they're identical.
they're literally the same thing. Exactly. The play area is also, it's like the Apple store for kids, but we don't call that a town hall, right? And that's, I guess, the thing.
Okay. Take a little bit of a counterpoint then. Why wouldn't Apple invest more in this? Like, sure, make it bigger, make it nicer, make it like rebrand it. Why not? Because they've like...
Okay, fine. You know what? You sold me. You're freaking right. You're completely right. I'm thinking about this all wrong. I'm so cynical sometimes. You're right, actually.
You just made your own point or made the opposite point that you're trying to make.
That might be the first time on the show that you have like so like saliently just like won me over to your side.
I definitely don't think it's the first time.
It's not the first time. You're always wrong, Philip. No, you're right. Actually, I have to take my own advice, which is when something's working, you got to double down and invest, you know, invest more in it and grow that strategy. I mean, what could they possibly do next? You know, besides an Apple store, a bigger Apple store. that is the town hall, I suppose.
With more spaces to talk and more people can get in there because it's already maxed out.
You know what an Apple store needs that it's missing? Bean bags. Yeah, we need. We both went with orbular objects there. So it's a very interesting thing. I actually want to go check this out. I find what an interesting sort of tangential story is the once sort of flagship Apple store, the glass cube in New York City. What's the name of that store? I forget the name of that store, which was sort of their flagship store. That store has is also due for a refresh, and I think they're doing a similar. I don't know. I'm actually really bored of this topic now since you changed my mind. So.
Well, the next topic.
Also
it's
boring.
Interesting.
I don't know if it's boring so much.
Adobe is working with banks to merge physical branches with digital experiences. And essentially, you know, it's kind of a, you know, potential just another one of those things that Adobe's doing that I don't really
care. Just did I have to ask you in the nicest way, did you read the story?
I did. Yes.
Okay. So here's what I took away from it, which is hilarious, which is they call it fluid experiences, yes, which uses artificial intelligence to automatically reformat content on a bank's website to fit a screen inside the bank. I'm thinking to myself, so they used AI to build a responsive web page? Like, I don't understand what's happening here.
This is
location,
why,
like, now, this is like, this I find interesting. Location-based personalization, where they're using a customer's geographical information to trigger a notification on the smartphone once they enter a bank. So that's basically like geofencing.
Right.
I find it interesting because banks right now are doing this themselves, and to have a tech partner, you know, in a sort of an emergent fintech way, and a trusted tech partner like Adobe that could potentially be bringing this sort of, you know, more future-leaning tech.
And it's funny that they're doing this because of a decline in physical branch visits.
Yeah.
Which
why do they want people really to come into the branch?
Why do they want to even increase branch visits? Like, that doesn't even make sense to me. Like, why wouldn't you want to move your customers out of your store in this case? Like,
I'm fairly positive that, you know, the things that actually make banks money, which is not checking, it's loans, it's the things that you have to sit down and talk to a person, you know, about.
Sure.
But the and getting is, people to come in, you know, probably increases the chances of you actually talking to one of those people, right?
Well, I might be an outlier, but that does not happen for me.
Have you ever been like upsold at your, you've never been upsold at your bank? You walk into the bank for whatever, you know, dumb reason that you came into the bank and they.
Not once.
Really?
Yes.
But you obviously don't have Wells Fargo. You'd have like 30 bank accounts right now. Like they.
Oh my gosh. Nope. I'm like, get me out of here as fast as possible.
I got you. You know who else said, get me out of here as fast as possible? The airport bomber that, this is a terrible segue. okay, here's a better segue. We finally figured out what loyalty programs are good for.
There
and you
go.
Said, what there are they? Yes. What are they good for, Philip?
What are they good for, Philip?
They are good for getting airport bombing suspects when the FBI can't catch them. REI, I love this story, by the way. I don't know why I love it so much. I feel like it has some bearing on what we talk about. Oh, but REI...
It does. I'll expand a little bit.
Keep going. Please help me, because I haven't figured out why I like this so much. But REI... And the FBI work together to actually catch this suspected airport bomber. So it was a person, a guy who I will not give the dignity of mentioning his name, who set an improvised explosive device at Asheville Regional Airport on October 6th in North Carolina. So he, you know, according to the surveillance footage, he came in, you know, in a black cap and after midnight, and he left the bag inside the building. I guess the FBI had found a bag in the woods, which was an REI bag. And they found, you know, all kinds sort of like the accoutrement of, you know, building a bomb. But they used this to go back to basically a local Asheville REI store, and they found, like, through all the, you know, the FBI process, they found that, you know, maybe this was the guy. So they actually used, you know, he had used cash to purchase, but the way that they found him was that he used his REI loyalty membership number when he paid. And that's how they got the guy.
I think that's what the part that gets you good, because, like, cash... Cash doesn't even matter anymore. Like, cash used to be like this transparent.
Yeah, off the grid, right?
Yeah. Now you can't buy things without entering your loyalty number, or they cost ridiculous amounts of money. So
unbelievable.
It doesn't matter if you pay with cash or credit card or whatever, you're being tracked, and the FBI will use your information use your loyalty information to find you.
Oh my word. And I love that. This is what's great is that this poor, I mean, not poor anything. If the guy actually bombed the airport, he's kind of a scumbag, but, this guy also had the presence of mind to pay with cash, but not the presence of mind to try to get those REI points. Like, he knew what was happening to him too. This is his denim jacket. Like, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway. No, that's exactly. Well, maybe he realized, maybe he was just, you know, buying something in REI and didn't want to miss out.
That's true. You know, what's more likely the case is that he didn't buy the bag with the express purpose of putting bombing materials in it. It was likely an unrelated purchase, but it's just very interesting true. That we finally found a real use for loyalty programs in this country.
Which that's the other part that tickles your funny bone.
Yeah, that tickle. I just want to keep saying that over and over.
Yeah, that's that. You know, yeah, all in jest, because
yeah, I do think loyalty awesome. Has a. You know, have we ever talked about the future of loyalty on this program?
You know what? We actually had someone lined up to come on the show. Like it was like going to be like our first interview and it fell through.
Yeah.
And we never did anything with it. We need to go back and do something.
Yeah, we need to go back. We need to go back to that. I feel like loyalty programs in general, I don't know. They feel like very, very sort of aged, ancient systems. And you know, I don't know. I love loyalty programs. I'm a member of many, many, many loyalty programs, but yeah, I feel like there's definitely some prime disruption candidates there.
I agree with that. I think that there's a lot of opportunity there.
Yeah. I'd love to get someone on the show that's an expert in that area. This is all a bunch of sort of like passive aggressive hints to somebody that might be listening right now. So Future Commerce is brought to you by DotMailer. DotMailer is used by thousands of marketers around the world. It has quick and easy campaign creation with a world-class intuitive interface. The DotMailer team is always on hand from email creation, creative, and delivery to dedicated consultancy helping you build your own success story. DotMailer is built to play well with others. You can build your own marketing cloud by extending DotMailer or integrating it with your existing e-commerce and business platforms. Become a smarter, faster, better marketer and create sophisticated and measurable campaigns with DotMailer. Go to dotmailer.com/futurecommerce to start your free trial today and be sure to use the offer code FUTURECOMMERCE for 20% off DotMailer packages. Thanks again to DotMailer for supporting Future Commerce.
Also, now we get to talk about one of my favorite topics again.
Your very favorite topic, I might say.
Yeah, probably.
You got to say it the way you usually say it, though.
Oh, what's that? Let me hear.
I'm pretty sure
you're pretty good impressions, Philip.
You give like a sort of a sing-songy like body data.
Oh, do I?
I'm pretty sure you do. I'm gonna go through the show. I'm gonna find everywhere you've ever said body data, and I'm gonna cut it into one super clip.
I think it's more kind of yelly because I'm kind of excited about it.
Yeah. So you actually have a body tech story, which I think is cool.
Yeah. So one of the things that was super interesting that just happened is John Hancock announced, which is a life insurance company, one of the largest life insurance providers. Is partnering with Apple to offer all of its new and existing members basically free Apple Watches. That's a perk of the program. And so essentially you sign up for the program, you get the device for $25, basically free. But as long as you exercise regularly for 2 years, you'll be allowed to keep the device for that $25. If you don't, then you'll have to pay off it off in installments. And what I love about this is that pretty much we kind of called this a little bit on episode 8, which is that insurance companies are going to get involved in body monitoring devices, and they're going to be the ones to fund the consumer's use of these devices. And there's going to be a lot more gamification. Like this is some minimal gamification, like,
Oh,
get a free device. But in the future, there's going to be way more gamification of health And sure. I think you said in the last episode that we did that sort of the future of the world depended on, what was it? Disruption of food service.
Public transit.
Public transit and food service. I'm going to add on gamification of health to that list, because that's a big deal. And it's going to become a bigger deal. And I was thinking about this even more lately. And I was like, you know, this is just the move towards sort of the push form of healthcare, right? Where it's been the pull form of healthcare before, where, you know, we have to go and, you know, we're waiting on the health providers are waiting on us to go and tell them when we're sick. Now they're going to be pushing to us and saying, hey, your device just said, you know, you need this, or your device is saying this, and that means you need to do this. And, you know, our checkups
and sign in with your Chase.com account right now. And we can see all the times you went to Taco Bell in the last month. Like, I don't know. Like, yeah. That's a slippery slope.
It is a slippery slope. It is. I mean, absolutely a slippery slope. And I think there's going to be some amount of, you know, resistance against this. That said, we have some serious health system issues in this country, and I'm really looking forward to how the tech community applies themselves to this. And one of the things I was thinking about was, you know, I wonder if there's some studies out there about how preventative care saves money. I'm sure there are. I need to go look it up.
Yeah. That is like the crux of the actual, that is healthcare.
Right. Right. No, I think about us building websites at our respective companies, and like, if we do something right the first time or make sure that a problem doesn't happen, that's going to save everyone 10x or more time and money down the road. Right.
Right.
I'm sure that's 100% true for healthcare as well. I think that our system right now is set up where, you know, people are actually kind of afraid of doing preventative stuff because they don't know how much it's going to cost them. And it might be an additional expense that they don't need to go take care of. And I'll use myself as an example. I have like a small lump in my back that's supposed to be benign. They said you could get rid of it if I wanted. And I was like, you know, whatever. I don't want to spend the money on it because it's not scary, even though they sort of recommended it's like it's not a problem, but you know, if you want to get rid of it, we, you know, kind of recommend that you do. And I was like, whatever, this is something I can do later. I'm not worried about it, which is probably a bad way to think about it. Right. But it's really hard to get an estimate on how much something's going to cost and blah, blah, blah. You know, I think this is happening across the board. It's not just me. There are a lot of people out there that are afraid to get preventative care done because they don't know how much it's going to cost them. So
also doctors are scary, and
also doctors are scary, right? What if I'm going to get a little future for a second. What if we made preventative care for free for everyone?
All right, Bernie Sanders, back it down now.
I know.
I love this idea. Keep going. Yeah. Riff on it.
So if you're already sick, you still have to pay, and you know, we can work out how that works. And I'm not going to try. I'm not smart enough to figure that out.
Brian's fixing healthcare in the United States.
Preventative care is covered, and we find a way to make that happen. it could save the country an insane amount of money. Okay, there's my little Brian's going to fix the world moment, and I'll be done with that.
I think you're definitely in the same vein of what I think insurance companies would want as well. I think they want less risk in their pool of subscribers, right? Like you want healthcare expenses to be the outlier, right? Or the major healthcare expenses to be the outlier. I heard something really, really interesting, it might've been Planet Money. It was on an NPR podcast, I'm pretty sure. But they talked about how the sense that, and we're getting off into politics here a little bit, but it does come back around in that. So President Trump has just recently signed an executive order to cease payments to insurance companies, which were offsetting costs under the original Obamacare plan. And those subsidies were going to fund low-income health care. So they were offsetting costs for low-income health care. That was a there was a court ruling that basically decided that those were, some people are using the word unconstitutional, but not required as part of the Obamacare setup. So the federal government doesn't have to do it, however you want to frame that. So they're stopping those payments. The insurance companies are required to continue to make that premium to drive down the costs for the low income people receiving the benefit. So they're going to lose out money anyway. So the general consensus is, well, does the insurance company lose money or do they raise premiums to offset the cost? And it turns out, and I did not know this, but it kind of blew my mind, that insurance regulators from state to state actually want insurance companies to raise premiums. Like, I don't know if this blows your mind or not, but government regulators want insurance companies to raise premiums year to year. They want the 20% increase in premiums.
Wait, why?
Because they don't want instability in the insurance market. The only thing worse than insurance companies already operate on a 3-4% margin anyway. But the only thing worse than instability in the insurance market and uncertainty is actually having a legitimate crash of a big provider with lots of subscribers that can't afford to make its bills. And
too big to fail.
They would rather have basically a scenario where they have 20% year-on-year premium increases and have the insurance companies continue to stay in business than them not be able to pay their bills.
How do 20% year-over-year increases in premiums equate to 2-3% margin or whatever you said?
Well, this is government regulators who are basically legitimizing or authorizing the premium increases to offset rising costs. And it all comes back down to what you said earlier, which is that there are legitimately rising costs. Not only is the cost of medicine getting more expensive, the cost of being a doctor and practicing is becoming more expensive. I have a friend of mine who is an anesthesiologist who is just telling me that if you look at what we have, all the M&A activity that we have in tech and fintech and in fashion and all this stuff that you and I deal with in retail, it's the same on the healthcare side. There are no private anesthesiology practices anymore. They all belong to one or two or three major, you know, national conglomerates or networks of doctors. Right. Doctors aren't partnerships anymore with profit sharing. They get legitimate salaries. And you know what? Those salaries are sometimes lower than when the profit share would have been. And they have rising education costs coming out of school. So they have greater debt to pay over a longer period of time. It's not like things are getting cheaper for anybody. It's becoming more difficult for everybody across the board. Now, their multipliers are bigger. An anesthesiologist is making $450,000, you know, right? But they graduated with $300,000 of school loans. And we didn't, you know.
It's like, still like a year, yeah, like 1 year.
Whatever. At any rate, like, and they also, there's a lot more risk in that business too as well.
Yes, I think.
So you have an interesting dichotomy there in that, really, the way to limit risk in the pool is to have more healthy people in the pool. That is the key insurance debate that we have been having for the last 12 years in this country. And to keep more healthy people in the pool, to keep insurance markets stable, we need to either incentivize unhealthy people to become more healthy, or we need more healthy people to be mandated to require to be carrying that insurance. It's tough.
This is why I'm so excited about this topic, because I feel like this is where Silicon Valley can come in with you know, games in augmented reality and virtual reality.
I do think technology could incent people, you know, into better behaviors. You call it gamification. I mean, if there were actual, the thing is that there is a real world gamification. There is already gamification in this area. Okay. We're way off on this tangent. I'm just going to go with it.
Go with it.
You would not believe the amount of money that it costs you to be obese in this country. And I know firsthand because I've been obese, okay? And I'm slowly working my way backwards from it. But if you think about,
I wouldn't say slowly.
Yeah, no, no,
I'm working my way back.
I'm working my way back.
You've worked your way back.
I've worked my way back. So let me tell you a little bit about what it's like to be obese. I went to buy, I bought a bathing suit about a year and a half ago, and a bathing suit at Walmart or Target isn't really gonna fit. I was a big boy. Right. So you know where you go? You go to Destination XL, which is a store that's specifically for big and tall, you know, people. They have appropriately sized clothing. Do you know how much a bathing suit from Destination XL costs? $120 for a pair of swim trunks. Okay.
Dang, dude.
All right. So then you compound that with the fact that your clothes are actually just fundamentally bigger and heavier. So you know what that equates to? Excessive baggage fees when you check a bag because your bag is overweight, because you have two pairs of shoes and two suits and, you know, and toiletries. And that's just the beginning. So you have excessive healthcare costs, obviously, because you're probably not terribly healthy. And things sort of wear out a little bit faster. You tend to, you know, shower more. You're probably a little hotter. So you sweat a little bit more, which means you probably do laundry a little bit more, or dry cleaning a little more often. All of these things are technically costing you more money. And at summary, I mean, you could even take it down to the minutia of your car has to drive, you know, your fat butt around. And so it's probably using a little more gas. Across the board, it costs a lot of money to be obese. And I didn't realize it. You know, I would pay for the seat upgrade in just so that I would have a little more room in my seat, because it's kind of uncomfortable to sit in a really small seat in economy class when flying.
No, that's true for everyone.
Yeah, no, it's true for everybody, but I'm saying more so as a larger person, right? Yeah, so anyway, it comes down to if it were just purely about incentive, I would think that the social stigma and the money savings that you could have from being healthier at a smaller waist size, you would think that that would be incentive enough. Now, I do think if you can make it a game, which I think is different than incentive, it could be transformational. But the game right now is social media, and that's not been enough to change people's behaviors. So is it a fitness app? I don't know what it looks like, but it's got to be something larger than, pardon the pun, it's got to be something larger than, you know, just, you know, the app that the insurance company puts out. It's the effect of the equivalent of the Geico thing you plug into your car to make sure you're not speeding, you know?
Yeah. And it needs to happen soon. I was reading another article recently that said basically Americans are retiring later, dying earlier, and are sicker in between the entire process than they were over the past few years. So
oh, wow. That's encouraging.
Yeah. Yeah. So this, something needs to change.
Started actually, you went down this tangent with a story, about body tech and, you know, an insurance company offering Apple Watch, right?
But yes,
this also is legitimate technology that could help save your life and help
prolong your life.
Right.
Very good point.
James T. Green, who's over at Gimlet Media Podcasts, he posted on Twitter that he has a HeartWatch app that he runs on his Apple Watch, and it alerted him of an elevated heart rate, which was completely abnormal for his activity level. And he kept an eye on it and eventually went to the ER, where they found a pulmonary embolism. And this relates directly to the, I think, the WWDC story that we saw a couple months ago from Apple, that they participated in the world's largest heart study from data that came from anonymized data that came from Apple Watch and WatchOS. So the point is that these could be also early detection devices to keep you from having, you know, what ostensibly would be a more catastrophic and ultimately more expensive, possibly lifelong journey or life-ending journey that could also be more expensive for you. So yeah, I kind of wrestle with it there. It's not just about health. It could also be early warning and detection, you know?
Yeah, totally. Yeah, no, and that's just it. Like, if we keep at this, and I think if we keep working at building better body tech and using the tools that we have out there in creative ways to measure our bodies, I think we will be able to come up with some tools that can help save lives and do a better job of monitoring our health and propelling us to a better level of fitness. So, yeah. Speaking of like better life, Puerto Rico. We've been talking, I think, for the past couple episodes now about the rebuild there. Tesla is now investing in Puerto Rico. And they're in talks. I'm not sure if it's come out yet, but they're in talks to install power grids powered by solar energy and storage batteries. What was this? How long ago was that we released 46?
I don't know. Maybe two weeks ago.
I mean, this is exactly what we were talking about in that episode. This is an opportunity for Puerto Rico to rebuild their infrastructure from the ground up and really take advantage of the new tech that's out there and ultimately, hopefully, come out with an even stronger infrastructure. And we were really hoping that companies like Tesla would get involved. And so it's definitely happening.
I mean, maybe even a more decentralized infrastructure that doesn't have to be specifically tied into, a government-run utility grid system, right?
And exactly.
Yeah, Tesla has already done this, by the way. I mean, there's two pieces of news. One, they've already set up a microgrid in Puerto Rico that is, electricity via solar power with their power pack batteries. But now I think the conversation turns to, can they adopt this on a larger scale? And the government officials in Puerto Rico are considering basically just privatizing the energy grid with Tesla's help.
Which is crazy.
Privatizing the energy. One more time. Privatizing Puerto Rico's energy grid with Tesla's help, which is like kind of gives me the heebies for just a little bit, but it's also exactly probably what Puerto Rico needs, and I don't know what I expected it to look like, so I kind of like it. Gosh, it's awesome. I don't know. I'm sort of torn. Like the privatization of a fundamental, human need in 2017.
Yeah, here's the thing. Even if the worst case scenario, Tesla's gets all evil. And Elon Musk-y.
Worst case scenario.
Right? Worst case scenario, right? You can bet that they're going to regulate the hell out of it.
That's true. And then, 15 years from now, we'll be having a conversation about how government regulators want them to increase the cost of power 20% year over year for stability. Because they'll be too big to fail.
Too big to fail.
Yeah, exactly. Unbelievable.
Oh my gosh.
Gosh, I really have nothing more to say about that.
I know, for real.
So between Project Loon, which is friggin' hot air balloons, bringing Wi-Fi and LTE to Puerto Ricans in the air from Google, and between that and Tesla's microgrids, this is shaping up to be at least a silver lining. But 80% of people still don't have power. 31% of people have running water.
Yeah, it's still bad.
It's still bad. As cool as that sounds, it's still very bad there. So,
yeah. So cryptocurrency.
there's no smooth transition.
There's no smooth transition out of this. Russia is considering its own cryptocurrency. That was a pretty interesting announcement. Putin basically just came out and said, maybe we should do this. Maybe we should have our own version of this. What were they going to call it again?
Crypto ruble.
That's right. I don't know if it's officially happening yet, but Putin's called for it, which means it is happening. this doesn't sound to me like what crypto is intended to be in any way, shape, or form. It just sounds like another currency.
The whole point of cryptocurrency was decentralization, right, and anyone could mine.
No, it's the opposite of everything.
This is the opposite of that.
Stands for. Yeah.
Right.
I'm gonna I'm going to say something a little bit provocative, but is cryptocurrency about to fail? Like, I feel like I've seen a lot of stories recently where a lot of people in, you know, in the financial community are saying, you know, a lot of these new cryptocurrencies are just scams. This is the most opportunity that we've ever seen for fraud. The Wolf of Wall Street guy said that recently.
Wow.
I think, you know,
that guy knows fraud when he sees it too, you know?
Exactly. So if you're involved in cryptocurrency, be careful, because right now there's a lot of opportunity to be scammed.
I don't know. Yeah. I mean, yeah, maybe. What I think is terrifying for me is, at the time of this recording, Bitcoin is, approaching 6,000 to one US dollars, 5,650.
That's terrifying.
It is terrifying, isn't it? I don't know.
Yeah. This can only end in tears.
I mean, it's being driven up. So there's a bunch of things driving that price up. I don't know that that's sustainable. I'm not a cryptocurrency analyst by any means, and I don't listen to enough of the podcast to actually get it. But my sense is that this is a bubble. And what happens to bubbles, Brian?
They do burst, typically.
They burst. That's what happens.
Not always.
Typically. No,
not
bubbles
if they're
burst,
too big
man.
To fail.
Well, yeah, this is not a Lehman Brothers, you know.
No.
Actually, Lehman's the worst example in that crowd. So I don't know.
I mean, even MasterCard is accepting blockchain payments now.
Okay. I mean, actually, I'm big on this story. So what's this one all about?
Yeah. So MasterCard recently announced that payments can now be made on blockchain. I don't think they're really, so it's just offering, you know, this option for business to business transactions.
Yeah.
Sounds like, but I don't, you know, I don't know. I don't think it's going to be rolled out to everyone.
This is basically its own API.
Yeah.
This is like MasterCard's own API, and it's a blockchain API effectively. You know?
Yeah. It's a pretty big reversal though, because previously they were very anti Bitcoin.
Yeah.
And so, I think that they realized that this movement's picked up enough momentum at this point to be a legitimate form of payment. Blockchain, where it's at right now is just, it's concerning to me, but
for me, this is more about people trying to, it's like domain squatting. And you know, I think everybody recognizes the potential of the technology, but everybody is just trying to, you know, stake their own name and lay claim to a particular name or brand their own in the meantime, while, you know, these other markets kind of go crazy. Bitcoin is still the Wild West as far as MasterCard is concerned, right?
Speaking of the Wild West, I'm going to transition really quickly. There's a new bill that's been introduced is it the House?
Yeah.
I think it's the House. Yeah.
Yeah.
That would allow people who have been hacked to hack back. And I think you had a really amazing tweet. Why don't you go ahead and I thought your tweet was just brilliant.
I mean, basically, so what's really funny is, so they're calling this the ACDC Act, which was the Active Cyber Defense Certainty Act, the ACDC Act. So I said the only thing that's more metal than making the web a legitimate and legal Wild West where, you know, you can like exact revenge legally on somebody. The only thing more metal than that is literally naming that bill ACDC. Like that's, it doesn't get much more hardcore than that. This particular story has sort of a weird subtext to it, in that sort of built into it. It like you can hack back, like you could hack an attacker back, but you can't actually do anything illegal still. Like you can't destroy property, So I don't know what that means, hack back.
It means nothing. Yeah. So, I don't know. There's no teeth to it.
My guess is that this basically legalizes the malware researchers that are sort of in under scrutiny to do things like modify a Trojan or some sort of a worm or something like that in transit so that it can sort of become, you know, sterile or benign. This happened actually to a security researcher recently, and I'm not prepared to share the story because I forget all the details. But a security researcher with the recent, there was a recent Windows attack that was going around that was some ransomware, and it was hitting a dummy domain and making sure that domain wasn't registered. And this security researcher found that, and it was a gibberish domain. It was, you know, some SHA-1 key. It was, you know, 512 characters or something like that, some crazy domain. And effectively what he realized, the researcher realized that this domain wasn't registered at all. And he supposed that maybe the attackers had put that in as like a sort of a kill switch, that once a domain did get registered and it was a backdoor, once that domain did go live, that the worm would stop propagating. And he was right. So what he did was he registered the domain and the whole world rejoiced because this thing, you know, all the ransomware stopped. But little did he know that that actually, he came, you know, he found himself in the crosshairs of the government who's, you know, basically have sort of allied him into and lumped him into a bunch with all these other, you know, the bad guys effectively. And he was arrested. And so essentially this kind of legislation is necessary to protect people like him. It would be considered active defense because it would be slowing a hacker through the deception or movement of files or, you know, or in this case, a domain, and not necessarily hacking the attacker. So the headline's better, as usual. The headline's better than the actual content, but I don't know. This cybersecurity is getting really, really...
Yeah, I think the other thing that's sort of like this sort of, you know, and you mentioned subtext, but this sort of gives the feel to, which is the government isn't really equipped to
right. We don't have the legal measures necessary to deal with this stuff.
Right. Exactly. And you know, that's due to a lot of things, probably namely that, you know, when we initially, this country's never seen anything like this. The world's never seen anything like this before. No one's prepared. And so right. The experts that know how to handle this, and I'm not saying the government doesn't have security experts and people that can't hack. I'm sure that they do. But you know, when it comes to actually like litigation and law and how people are how hackers are handled, like there's still a lot of holes in our system.
Yeah,
and so bad people are getting away with bad things and good people are getting in trouble for things that, you know, they're probably shouldn't be getting in trouble for.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I don't know that, first of all, this is just a law that was introduced. I don't know that it will ever go any further than that.
Not with the headline like that.
Yeah, not with that headline. It won't.
Yeah.
I do think we need we do need legal measures to protect a lot of things. Actually there was a story that we didn't cover, which was Snapchat created sort of a statue or monument, which was then later vandalized. But it was not really vandalized. In AR, there was a separate AR app that you had to download to look at the Snapchat vandalism. But I think that there are some really interesting...
Wait, hold on here. We didn't talk about this, so I want to know this one because this is... Did you just say something got vandalized in augmented reality?
Yes, yeah. Oh, you didn't see this story? This was huge.
No.
Yeah, this
no,
was...
No, I missed that.
Yeah, somehow it didn't make our show notes a couple weeks ago. So we never talked about it. So we... This is the kind of thing I want to hear about. We did talk about it over on Mage Talk for some reason. I think because Kaylin was super interested in like what even was going on. He's like, I don't understand what the problem is. Like, it's not really vandalism if I have to download a different app. Like, you know, like, is it really vandalism if I have to download another app? It's just like, it's just a different AR experience. Like, that's not vandalism. That's just, you're using the technology in a different way. Right. And, so I'm trying to pull up, Snapchat, vandalism.
While you're doing that, speaking of Snapchat,
what's that?
The news about Spectacles, essentially.
Oh my gosh. Yes.
Yeah. So it sounds like Snapchat's sitting on like hundreds of thousands of Spectacle units that are
now unsold. This is according to The Verge, right?
Right.
So, take it with a grain of salt. But yeah, hundreds of thousands of Snap Spectacles, right? They're just hundreds of thousands of these that are unsold that they've got to get rid of somehow. Yeah, they still haven't come up with a second product. They supposedly there was going to be a drone at one point. I don't know if you remember that.
I don't remember that. What are they going to do with them? They're going to like drop them.
They're going to be buried in a landfill next to all those Atari ET games out in the desert somewhere. Do you remember that? Yes. The Atari ET game?
Yes.
I actually owned that game, which was fun, actually. I just pasted it into the chat. So there was a few weeks ago, there was some virtual art that Snapchat had created, which was, basically a balloon animal of some kind. It's like, anyway, it was a Jeff Koons sculpture. What had happened was somebody went through CrossLab's AR app and they basically recreated the exact sculpture, but then put graffiti over top of it. And it was more of making a public statement than anything else. They just created the same exact 3D model. They put it in the same exact place. You had to download a different app fundamentally to see it. They're calling it vandalism. It is not truly vandalism in the sense that somebody vandalized the Snapchat version, but I think it does bring up an interesting point, which is, you know, at some point, somebody being able to label a particular physical location or place objects into physical location, regardless of the audience, regardless of the size of the app or the ubiquity of the app, if it is a sort of morally distasteful or hate speech or violent image, do we want that at all, right? And we have no means or no legal means of protecting ourselves from those things happening. And that's why I think that we'll probably see regulation in this regard much swifter than we would for something like, you know, hacking someone back who's trying to hack you.
Yeah, I don't think so. I don't think we're going to see regulation around this as much. I think it's going to be too hard to regulate. I would argue that, you know, this is going to become the norm, where people are going to do like subversive things and build on things and, you know, and in augmented reality in different spaces throughout the world. And sort of layer on top of each other. I think that's going to happen a lot. I think there's going to be definitely like you mentioned, this is an additional app that you had to download. Like I expect it to be things like that. This isn't going to happen within Snapchat's native app, but I do think a lot of things like this are going to happen, and there will be entire worlds upon worlds. lenses upon lenses, you know, whatever you want to call it, that are going to happen, and there's going to be very little anyone can do about it.
And on that bleak note, I think you're right. I think we're going to have to see. We have to wait and see for the future all the time. But I think that it's interesting to see what we prioritize as broadly affecting the safety of the American consumer. I think we mentioned a couple episodes ago that the SEC is actually filing investigation into blockchain and potentially regulating blockchain because it poses a financial threat to American consumers. I mean, really, it's interesting what we place the value on in the when it comes down to dollars and cents. I think when just like in the realm of when Google changes their algorithm, then retailers take notice. It's like, whatever's going to make me rank is now the most important thing for me to do. It doesn't matter what it is. and I think that it's the same, you know, if it makes us money, then it's important. If it loses us money, then it's even more important. that's what it's going to come down to. That's what we'll draft legislation around.
That's probably true. I agree with that. All right. I think that's probably it for today. That was a lot.
Is that it? An hour and 20 minutes? that wasn't enough for you?
Yeah, you know, just an hour and 20 minutes.
That was beautiful, though.
That was fun. It was good. We got into stuff I didn't even expect to get into. Like, so much stuff I didn't expect to get into. That was awesome.
This might be my new favorite episode. I really liked it. My jean jacket story.
Jean jacket story. That's the only reason it's your favorite episode.
It's the only reason why this was, you know, hour and 20 minutes, so.
Exactly. Yeah, it's at the beginning, too. So, you know. Yeah. Well, thanks for listening to Future Commerce. We want you to give us your feedback about today's show. So please leave us some feedback in the discuss comment box on our site or on Twitter or LinkedIn or wherever you can find us, direct email, whatever it is. If you're subscribed on iTunes, as always, as we always tell you, please leave us a 5-star review. You can also subscribe to listen to Future Commerce on iTunes and Google Play, or listen right now from your Amazon Echo with the phrase, Alexa, play Future Commerce podcast. And please, 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 if you like this kind of content, and you like thinking about what's next in commerce and you know, kind of the future of commerce, then please subscribe to FC Insiders. The next content that's coming is definitely worth your subscription.
So. We can't overhype it enough. Go now, futurecommerce.fm. Sign up.
Right on our homepage. It's at the top. It's at the very top of the website. You cannot miss it.
It says FC Insiders. I mean, just do it. That's it.
I'm not going to spell it. I'm not going to spell it. With that, keep looking towards the future.
Peace.